Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, July 17th. My name is Magnus Teeveld. I'm your host for this hour. We're going to be speaking to Felix Della Orden, Chief Steward of the Teaching Support Staff Union here at SFU, for an update on the strike action between the TSSU, which represents teaching assistants, and untenured faculty and research assistants, and other other members of the teaching community here at SFU who aren't regular faculty, which is a substantial amount of the teaching activity that goes on at SFU. That's going to be coming up in a little bit. We have Looking at Lyme and Bird Note and Climate Connections and a bunch of other interesting content for you today. We're going to start off with some music, though. This is from a brand new album from the band Beach House. This is American Daughter.
When I met her,
And that was Beach House. That's from a new release. That track was American Daughter. Joining me in the studio is Felix Della Orden, Chief Steward of the Teaching Support Staff Union here at SFU. They represent... Well, why don't you tell me who you represent for first?
Yeah, so we are the union for... the labor union for a lot of the teaching support staff, including teaching assistants, sessional instructors, English language culture instructors, and graduate facilitators. We also represent... The research assistants.
Yeah. And that's a substantial chunk of the sort of teaching establishment at any university, right?
Yeah, so we're actually the biggest union on campus in terms of membership. So it's a lot of the precarious teaching support workers. So a lot of members who are on semesterly contracts, stuff like that.
Right. And you've been in an open contract or contract negotiations or well, your contract has expired almost a year ago now, isn't it?
Yeah. So we've been in contract negotiations since November for the teaching support workers. We've been in contract talks with research for research assistants for longer. However, right now, we are on strike for the teaching support workers.
And that's been the case for about 2 months now.
Yeah.
What's the current status of the job action?
Yeah. So, we started with, some job actions that were quite straightforward, and small scale, that included an overtime ban and teach-ins. Anyone who was teaching in a class or a tutorial would spend 5 to 10 minutes talking about what we're fighting for, what's been going on to their class. And in retaliation, Simon Fraser University, the employer, threatened to take away our health benefits unless we paid the full kind of cost. Mm-hmm. And so this was kind of a really big escalation by any standards in kind of labor disputes like this. So we had to meet that with a picket line. So the next day... We put on a picket line for the science buildings here at Burnaby campus. And then ever since then, we've been doing rotating pickets. So it doesn't fall exactly like this, but more or less every couple of weeks, we've been having a picket line. It's been a couple of weeks now. While the overtime ban is and teach-ins are still in effect, we are planning our next picket line on Wednesday.
And is SFU still suspending the benefits? What's happened with that situation?
So, I mean, I think from the strength and power of our initial picket, and a lot of pushback from say like the faculty association and other groups regarding the threatening to take away our health benefits, we've kind of managed to have them not act on their threat.
Yeah.
So they haven't retracted the threat or anything like that, but it's kind of standing. But right now we are expecting them not to take any action on removing health benefits. So everyone still has, all their members still have access to their health benefits. I mean, obviously it's a fluid situation, but we were actually able to, prevent that from going through right away.
Yeah, I don't think that played out very well in a sort of PR basis for them, yeah. Particularly because, I mean, you are taking strike action, but it's very limited strike action. You haven't completely withdrawn your services.
Yeah.
You know, teaching is still going on. Students are still being served.
Yeah.
All that stuff is still happening. So sort of taking it. An action that may or may not be appropriate, that's a different question, in a full strike situation.
Yeah.
Seemed really heavy-handed, given, you know, that it's a limited strike situation at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was very heavy-handed. We were kind of surprised with that kind of retaliation. Like you said, that kind of thing, you know, something I disagree with, but is usually something, if it happens, happens much further down the line. So I think, like, during our last strike in 2015, they did, again, threaten to make the same threat, but it happened after months of sustained job action. And again, it ended up being a really bad PR situation for them. I think a lot of different unions and groups around campus saw it as kind of, you know, an attack that affects the most marginalized people on campus. And like this time, it came a day after Vice President of People Equity and Inclusion offered mental health services to people who might be affected by the strike. So they're, on the one hand, they're saying that they care about the health and safety of the community, and on the other hand, they're threatening to take away health benefits.
So remind us what the issues at stake and what you're taking this job action for.
Yeah, so we are fighting for a cost of living adjustment. We want pay tied to inflation. And we also want compensation tied to class sizes. So one of the things that we noticed since the pandemic is that class sizes started to increase. And there was no kind of mechanism to get paid for, say, if you have more students. So I've actually talked to many people who can teach up to 200 students and will get paid the same as if they were teaching, 60 students.
Right. And there's usually an increased workload that goes with that because you have to spend time with students. There's marking. There's a whole bunch of other things that sort of happen on a per student basis, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So there's more time, and it also affects the education of a lot of folks that are coming here as undergraduate students. So, you know, if you're only getting a certain amount of time to grade papers, the more papers that you have to grade, the less time you're able to spend with each student. So what we've been seeing is that, you know, our members are, you know, going to work overtime for no pay, the quality of education that they're able to get is actually decreasing. And we're just asking, you know, for pay tied to class size. There's also, you know, a lot of people looking for TA work every semester. It's not out of the realm of possibility to start hiring more. Yeah. And I mean, the other things we're fighting for as well is to keep sessional seniority in place and TA priority. So these are kind of seniority and priority systems that offer job security for our members who, like I said before, have to renew contracts on a semesterly basis. We're trying to, you know, get rid of what's called the equivalency system. So way back in the day, there were what's called equivalencies set up. So and what that is, I'll kind of give you an example, is that a 2-hour tutorial in sociology, anthropology, gets paid the same as a one-hour tutorial in English. And so, you know, there's obviously more work involved in, in running a two-hour tutorial. So we want that pay to be leveled across the board.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's almost a month since we last spoke.
Yeah.
Have negotiations been happening between recently?
Yeah. So we've had two bargaining sessions. One last week on Thursday, and then one the week before. There hasn't been anything really kind of substantial. Moving forward, at least on our fundamental issues. I think it's good that we are at the bargaining table and we're making at least small progress, but it's very clear to us that, you know, we're going to have to keep working at this and sustain job action to get move anywhere closer at the bargaining table.
Right. SFU hasn't, as far as I was able to see, released any new statements online. So they're, you know, the latest thing they're saying have said was, you know, they've offered as much as they're allowed to under the legislation. But as you've just explained, there's a whole bunch of other issues that aren't strictly related to that, to, you know, what they're allowed to increase pay on.
Yeah, and so I mean, there are many of the ways that we're trying to look for increased pay, right? Stuff like the increased compensation for class sizes is one thing that, you know, saves time and or money, right? That we can get paid more hours if we say have an increase of 100 students in our class.
Right, yeah. And those just seem like basic issues. I mean,
yeah.
You know, doing a two-hour tutorial versus a one-hour tutorial or having to deal with and manage a whole bunch more students.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that seems like a sort of obvious issue that probably does need to be addressed.
Yeah. And especially, I mean, again, like we saw this happening since the pandemic at the very least. And, you know, a lot more demands for different methods of learning. So like hybrid learning where, you know, you spend some time using Zoom and other kind of technologies and sometimes being in a classroom. And that has actually increased the workload because of all the kind of management you have to do online, whether it be managing kind of a Canvas page and communicating online or sending off emails. So I was a TA, for example, during the pandemic, and you spent so much time writing emails and responding to emails because you don't you have that same amount of time in class where you can kind of explain it to people.
And you're not just having conversations with students.
Yeah, exactly. and that adds up. That adds up to more time.
Yeah. So this has been going on, since last November and the strike action for a couple months now.
Yeah.
Does it feel for you like there's any conclusion coming soon?
Personally, I think that we're going to have to keep fighting for a little bit. I really hope, contrary to what many people might think, we don't like being on strike. We want to be in the classrooms. We don't want to deal with the stress of, say, not getting paid or anything like that. So we want it to be resolved. I think it's going to take a little bit more fight. This dealing with this administration has been tough at times, and we've been in a very long kind of labor dispute and really kind of trying contract negotiations. So it seems like they don't want to budge, but I am hopeful, especially since our first and second picket, we were able to kind of prevent benefits being taken away. We've seen some small movement at the table. I think we just need to keep up the fight, and eventually we can win.
And you mentioned that you are going to be doing some picketing on Wednesday. What can you say about that?
Yeah, so what I can say is that all teaching work will be considered struck work on Wednesday across all three campuses. Yeah. So that includes, you know, running tutorials, marking, invigilating exams. We will be sending up a picket line on the Surrey campus. If you are teaching that day or doing any sort of teaching work that day, we're asking people to come to Surrey campus instead to hold the line. So that's the next action, and that's going to be happening on Wednesday.
So would the Surrey campus be effectively closed by the picket?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And tutorials here at the Burnaby campus and the Vancouver campus will not be happening?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Should be a... Maybe there'll be some developments after that.
Yeah, hopefully. So hopefully I'm here in another week or two.
Okay.
With a bit of good news.
All right. Well, thanks for speaking with me today. Felix Del Orden, Chief Steward for the Teaching Support Staff Union here at SFU. They've been on strike for a couple months here at SFU. That action is going to be continuing, and we'll be talking to you again either to update on where things are going or to find out what the resolution is when it eventually comes, because it will eventually come.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Magnus.
Felix Del Orden, Chief Steward of the Teaching Support Staff Union here at SFU. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Let's take it to Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. You've probably heard the expression light as a feather. And bird feathers are amazingly light, but they're also strong, holding up to gale force winds and letting birds perform steep banked turns and dives. So how can bird feathers be both strong and light? The answer begins with the feather's basic building block, a molecule called beta keratin. It's a tougher version of the keratin that makes up human fingernails and hair. With this sturdy material, bird feathers can do more with less. But it's also about how those building blocks are arranged. A bird feather has a central shaft with many thin barbs that branch off. But zoom into those barbs, and you'll see that there's a lot of tiny barbules that branch off of the barbs. These barbules have hooks that help lock the barbs together like Velcro. This branching structure provides support throughout the feather, but it also has thousands of tiny gaps, making feathers flexible and free of unnecessary weight. From tiny hummingbirds to big, strong ospreys, the intricate features of feathers allow for amazing displays of speed and agility. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
The Polygon Gallery presents the North American premiere of Jeremy Shaw's latest and largest production to date, Phase Shifting Index, until September 24th, 2023. Employing various outmoded 20th century media, Shaw presents what appears to be documentary footage as the distant future, creating cognitive dissonance within the viewer's relation to a sense of place and time. To learn more about this event, visit thepolygon.ca.
It has been 10 years since Daft Punk released their international smash album, Random Access Memories. Daft Punk was always a popular band that sort of just a little bit under the radar. and you know, known by people who were big fans of electronic music. But this album, with its this song we're going to play, normally we're not about the hits here at CJSF or at programs like this one at Speak Up, but this really is such a good song. A collaboration of Daft Punk and Pharrell Williams and Nile Rodgers, which is so catchy, you really cannot keep your booty from moving. This is Get Lucky.
Nice again. We're up all night again. We're up all night again.